Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We are live on a Whiskey Wednesday. This is What We Watch When We Drink, the live podcast. We are back with you. We are streaming this monstrosity live all over the place on YouTube, the Instagram, the Facebook, the LinkedIn, boozedancing.com, our website. And let's see. No, we're not on our website.
No.
We are on our website? Oh, no. We're not. Let's see. If you have any pithy comments or questions, drop them in the chats on all those different places, and we'll take we'll also take non-pithy comments if you'd like.
By the way, pithy comments.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Redundant.
It is kind of. Yes. Let's see. As you are well aware, we are the official podcast of record of all duties, taxes, fees, and tariffs. And I'm excited to say that this podcast tonight is going duty-free, tax-free, fee-free, and tariff-free. Now, if we were doing this yesterday or even earlier this morning, I can't say that would be true. We tend to change our minds pretty quick here at headquarters. We're pretty willy-nilly. Lots of the podcasts are hitting you up for fees and all that stuff. Not us. We don't do that. We're here to keep money in your pocket, not some foreign podcast pocket that has been ripping you off for years. So we are tariff-free. Free tonight.
Hey, what's our trade deficit?
Yay.
What's our podcast trade deficit? Do we have one?
We are in a deficit. We're okay with deficits. Oh. We run deficits.
Okay, we're good with that.
We're fine.
Okay, all right.
We're pretty negative. And you know we're pretty negative. How are we doing?
To bring people from other countries because they're interesting guests and have things to say.
That's right.
We don't roll down and build a wall.
This is true. That's right. We drink foreign spirits a lot more than domestic spirits. So we are definitely running a deficit. We are definitely a deficit podcast. So there you go. So welcome everyone. Welcome to What We Watch When We What We Drink.
My God, have you been drinking already?
On the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network. I want to remind everyone before we get rolling too far that. You can hit us up on all the socials to see my two compadres and their great reviews of whiskey and beer or whatever's in front of them at the murder table. You can give that podcast five freaking stars when you get a chance to, because we still are tariff free. Tonight we got a lot of fun stuff going on. So before we get jumping into that, how are we doing, gentlemen? How are we?
Living the dream. Just living the dream.
Living the dream. We are living in the dream.
My Phillies played your Dodgers, and we were victorious. It was glorious.
That was a tough series. It was a tough series, a cold and wet series. Yes. Yes, that was not good.
The Atlanta Braves started the season without a win for a long period of time, which also made me very happy. Nothing like a team digging a deep hole to start.
Until last night.
But they can win one game. They just can't win a whole bunch.
It's good. It's true.
I am definitely pro-anti Brave, so I'm right with you. Baseball season's here. Basketball playoffs are here. Hockey playoffs are going to be here, too. NFL draft's in a couple weeks. We are in, I believe, the Masters is this weekend.
Yep.
We are in a total meltdown of sports in America.
It's the perfect storm.
It is a perfect storm. Last week was the NCAA March Madness Final Four men's and women's championships.
Women.
We are, and the Frozen Four for hockey is for college is coming up soon too, so we are in the thick of things, and that means a lot of television. So that's what we're going to be doing tonight. Be doing all right. Otherwise, we're good. We're all good.
We're hanging in there. We're doing our best. We're fighting the fight.
We're fighting the fight.
We're here. We're here. We're going to live another day. We're going to keep going.
We are a going concern.
And I'm really
mostly
concerned.
Because of what Mike is pointing
this
at.
This is what keeps me going. This is what keeps me going.
Oh,
what,
okay. Well, wait. We don't have a theme tonight for drinks, right? Or we don't have a particular. It's a grab bag.
No theme. Nope. It's a grab bag. Right. We have a one show we're going to talk about primarily, And other than that, we're going to reach into our own stashes and drink as we want.
Okay.
And why don't we just talk about what we're going to watch, talk about what we're watching tonight a little bit. The first big topic is the studio.
No drink? We're going to do this without a drink?
We're just talking about
what we're going to do. Okay.
This is the outline.
Give the crowd the kind of a little intro.
The what for?
That's right. The what for. Mostly the for. The what. So we're going to talk about The Studio, which is now on Apple, new series. And then we're going to go around just talking about what we've been watching and what we want to watch and what we're done watching with, just a quickie on that. And as we do that, we'll be talking about the individual whiskeys that we've chosen for the evening.
Okay.
So why don't we start there? Let's all pick our first whiskey for the night and chat about it for briefly. And then we can, Michael, you are very, very excited to talk about that bottle.
Go with Bottle and Bond. Nothing like a 10-year-old Henry McKenna. 50%.
You know, that's a very good whiskey.
It's good whiskey. And not a lot left. So this will be my second, third, and fourth whiskey, too, as I try and finish this one.
Very nice.
To make room in the cabinet for the next bottle.
If you're smart killing off a bottle tonight. That is a very smart.
It's because I saw so little was left. So this could be a bottle.
Yeah, yeah.
Where otherwise I would have had a couple bottles sitting here and made no progress. And then the powers that be would complain that I've made no progress and there's still bottles everywhere.
I am definitely on a bottle killing spree. But tonight we have two maybe, and they're not going to get killed, but I'm getting close. And one, a third one. Ange, what you got?
A while back, I don't exactly know how long ago it was, but Mike and I went to our dear friend, Mark Gillespie's, to help him clean out his stash of whiskey. So I came home.
Mr. Whiskey Cast.
I think it was beyond a stash. It may have been a hoard.
You know, it might have been an armada.
I think the dragon Smaug laid on less gold than he had whiskey.
I don't know what any of that means, but okay.
I don't know either, but it's funny.
He had a lot of whiskey. That's all I know. So his wife implored us that we each take a case home. So I took 12 bottles home. These three bottles that I have on my table right now are from the stash. I'll talk about the other two later. But for the first one, 10th Street American Whiskey out of San Francisco. Never had it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Never
heard it. Yeah.
It is an STR American malt, 46%, copper pot stills, water from the California Sierras, non-chill filtered. That's all I know about it.
And for those who don't know, what is an STR?
Shaved, toasted, recharred.
Shaved, toasted, recharred.
And a little addendum to that. That one is an Impex Beverages product. They are a distributor, or JVS. They are the ones that distribute that.
Oh, okay.
So that's Sam Thelmas and Company.
Well, I also picked it because I grew up on 10th Street in Philadelphia. So.
Oh, look at that.
So I figured, I'll do that. So that's where I'm
at. The one I chose actually goes back to my first visit to you gentlemen in New Jersey. Michael, you had this, I believe, or had a version of this that and I didn't know what it was. This is quite a long time ago. This is the Single Cask Nation version of that, of a Stoicha. The peated Bunnehabhain. And this one clocks in at 57.7%. It's 10 years old and it is of course single cask. It is one of 262 bottles and it's in a refill bourbon hogshead. So
that was from the Whiskey Sisters, right, Ange?
Yes, that was
the one you guys had. Yeah, yes.
What was the name of that? What was the name of the? I can't remember.
Milroy's?
John Milroy.
That was delicious. Yeah, that's right.
By the way, one of the sisters, I think one of the sisters got engaged. One is married.
Whoa, hello.
Yeah. I believe she, Gabby. No, not Gabby. Was it Gabby?
Congratulations. Don't know.
Gabby Shane was the youngest sister.
One of them was Gabby.
Yeah, yes. Lauren and, yes. and Gabby. Yeah, Gabby got engaged.
Lauren and Gabby.
So congrats to Gabby if she's out there listening.
Are they still in the business?
I honestly don't know. I haven't heard from them forever.
Don't know.
I hope so.
But yeah, that was one of the events we went to with them, and I picked up the bottle, and I was more than happy to share.
Delicious stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that was great. And so when I saw that Jason and Joshua and Jess had that one available recently, or not that one, but that
distiller
expression, sure. Peter Bunnehoven, I picked it up. So one, two, three, a little toe.
How old is that Stoetia?
10 years old.
10 year. Okay. Nice.
The other one was three, wasn't it?
It was three. It was really young and delicious.
Yeah, I remember it was young. Really young. Yeah.
All right. One,
shall
two,
we clink?
Sure.
Here we go.
Cheers. Wonderful. 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 Cheers, boys.
Hey, don't break the glass. Cheers. Take it easy.
Don't break the glass.
I figured if I got one or two or three of those in, you could sync them, and then it will all sound.
I'm not syncing anything. I don't edit this, man. This is as is. This is a Scratch and Dent podcast.
We are live. Remember, it's all live.
We'll clean that up in editing. Oh, that's good.
We're not
good. Good. Good.
So this is just lovely too. I tried it a few weeks ago. So yeah. It's the first time I'm really going back to.
Well, that's interesting.
Play with it.
That's kind of good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And which one do you have? Which what expression is that?
It just says it's single malt with the STR.
Yes. Yeah. STR. Okay. Yeah.
And what's the ABV?
46.
46.
Tastes a little hotter.
We texture to it. Our whiskey club did a tasting of their whole line at the time. Maybe I think it was during the pandemic, so it was probably 3 years ago. And all really lovely stuff.
Yeah, this is different.
Yeah.
Different. A little oily. Which I like. Very different. I don't know. I have to give it some thought. I'll give it some thought.
Speaking of my whiskey club, I just got a notification and Odd Whiskeys. Apparently, we're going to be doing a Korean single malt event.
Oh.
Who knew there was a Korean single malt?
And enough of those to do an event, right?
And well, it's a brand called Key One, K I, and then one.
Okay.
Two words. Never.
All right. Well, shall we jump into
interesting.
It?
Okay. Shall we jump into it? Let's jump
Let's
into
jump
it.
Into
okay.
It.
So I didn't know much about this thing.
Neither did I.
I heard about it, and we're talking the studio on Apple TV Plus. And
yes.
Yes. And I, I think I heard Seth Rogen on Howard Stern, and then I read a couple articles, and I said, wow, this is, and I don't think I even saw the trailer, and whatever they're talking about sounds interesting. And so I just took a chance on it a few days after it was released, maybe a week after it was released, and I just loved the first episode.
It was great. It was really fun.
It was really funny. So I shouldn't have even kind of jumped into my backstory on it. But Ange, do you have any information on it at all?
What do I have?
I know it's got a pretty good Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah, I didn't do like all the stuff here. I'll give you just the one liner.
That's okay.
Follows a legacy Hollywood movie studio striving to survive in a world where it is increasingly difficult for art and business to live together.
So. Right. So the first episode is the pilot and kind of the backstory on the show and jumps right into what this thing is about. It's a comedy starring Seth Rogen with Ike Barinholtz as his and Seth Rogen is an executive at a movie studio in Los Angeles, Hollywood, and Ike Barinholtz works with him, another executive. Catherine Hahn is also in it as as the head of marketing. And Catherine O'Hara was the former head of the studio.
Correct.
And she is, we don't know this in the beginning, but she is released. She's let go. She'd been there for 30 years. And Bryan Cranston is the, I don't know what his CEO
is he the owner
or something
is he,
of
is
the
youngest?
Oh, president or something of the Continental Films. Continental Studios hires or promotes, is a better word, Seth Rogen into that position. And Seth Rogen takes it, even though he was a protege of Catherine O'Hara. And he doesn't even care about the reasons why she was let go. He just takes the job. And he is he's from the old world of movies are important. that filmmaking is like an art.
He's a cinephile.
He's a cinephile.
With a C, right? Not an S.
Correct. And he wants to make great classic movies, right? But Bryan Cranston and the people upstairs, they want to make money. And they don't want someone in this position to not make money. They don't care about, what does Bryan Cranston say? We're not making films here. We're making movies that people want to pay to go see. That's
Cranston was too fantastic.
Right. So there's many cameos in this whole series. And there's been three episodes. I believe the fourth one dropped today. It comes out on Wednesdays. So we're talking about the first three episodes.
Yep.
It's a wonderful take on Hollywood and about the craziness of Hollywood movie making, and about how does art and art and commerce meet and cross, or does it cross, and how do things get done in Hollywood? The great thing about one of the great things about this, it's of course funny, but it's also got many, many cameos.
Oh my God.
Folks. It's endless.
I mean, the first episode, you got Scorsese.
And, oh my gosh. And your cousin.
Who's my cousin?
Who's his cousin?
Oh, Buscemi. Cool, that's right.
Come
Steve
on,
Buscemi.
Man.
Oh, Buscemi.
Buscemi.
That's right. Buscemi's
come on.
Yes.
Cousin Buscemi. Steve.
And Nicholas.
And yes. Everybody's playing themselves, right? Kohler. Buscemi. It's Charlize Theron's in it briefly.
Yep.
Charlize Theron, Nicholas Stoller,
I believe,
is a real person.
And what's interesting is I think they're all people that Seth Rogen's worked with.
Yeah.
So he's just asking them to, like, hey, I was in this movie with you. Could you give me like 5 minutes? Just give me 5 minutes. And they show up again.
I don't think he worked with Martin Scorsese.
Except for Scorsese.
Okay, yeah.
But I think a lot of the other cameos, it's just like, yeah, this is somebody I work with.
The thing is, remember, Scorsese's got the whole Apple connection because they did Flowers of the Killer Moon.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yes, that's a good point.
So there's all these connections, right? I mean.
So we can talk about the episode specifically and just also in the show in general. The wonderful thing about this kind of comedy writing is that it's kind of like old school.
Yeah.
Like an old school sitcom.
It was very Marx Brothers to a degree.
It's very Marx Brotherian, right? And it's very
chaotic.
Kind of loops. It's chaotic, and it's also Seth Rogen say in the second episode about how things come around back to himself? What's that called? He used a term.
Bookend.
Bookend. And a lot of sitcoms
and callbacks.
Do the bookending.
Right.
Bookends and callbacks.
Callbacks and bookends, right? Yes.
I love a good callback.
And there are every episode's that way. And that's just like, Three's Company or whatever. That's how all sitcoms are, the old sitcoms of yesteryear were written. You come up with a crazy premise and follow the story, same with Seinfeld too. And you'd come back and ends with that same premise in some fashion.
You know what was beautiful about the first one?
When he's
talking to Cranston about the whole thing with Kool-Aid, and then he's talking to Scorsese, and Scorsese's talking about his movie. And then it clicked in my head, and I was like, "Oh my God, they're not going there."
And they did,
and it was just—it was beautiful. It was so good.
So maybe I should say we are totally for spoiler alerts.
Absolutely.
If you're listening to this and you haven't watched it, you're too bad. You're gonna hear stuff you can just watch on TV, but we're gonna tell you first.
Go watch it anyway. Good.
Go try it. It's really good. I actually watched the series twice. I watched the first episode three times.
The show's so nice, you had to watch it twice? Or thrice.
That's right. So the first episode, Seth Rogen, his character Matt Remick, gets promoted. And Bryan Cranston tells him he is this close to nailing down the rights to the Kool-Aid character. And he wants a blockbuster movie made out of the Kool-Aid character. And Seth Rogen doesn't really like the idea, but he really wants the job, and takes upon himself, we're going to make the auteur's version of something out of Kool-Aid. So they scour Hollywood to find someone who could write a great script about Kool-Aid. Nick Scholar, who's done a bunch of comedies, comes in with a great idea, but he's not what Seth Rogen had in mind. And then he gets a meeting with Martin Scorsese. And Martin Scorsese has this great idea for a film. He's been working on it for years, and it's got a big budget. It's got $200 million, and it's about the Jonestown Massacre.
Jim Jones.
Well, of course, Jim Jones. And of course, Seth Rogen. Yeah.
Where everybody was drinking the Kool-Aid.
Which is where the phrase comes from, right? Says,
yep. That's right, exactly. So Seth Rogen puts those two together and said, hey, you know, I'll make your movie and I'll give you $10 million for the script if you call it Kool-Aid.
Here's the name for it. Kool-Aid.
And Kool-Aid. So he thinks he's got this amazing, he does, an amazing director, Hall of Famer, and he's got the Kool-Aid thing nailed down. And he's got a $200 million budget, actually $225 million, I think, budget. And he's going to make everyone happy, right? Anyone want to pick up the story from there?
Well, Cranston pretty much says, you're not making it, right? No, that's right. He's getting ready to tell Cranston he's going to make this movie. But Cranston pretty much intimidates him. And he said, well,
as everyone does.
Right. Right, yes. He folds.
He just folds.
So basically, so, he says, I'm going to pay him $10 million to not make the movie.
Catherine Hahn, who's head of the production, makes just this quick little vignette
kind of marketing
of like the head of promotions. I mean, as a like just the Kool-Aid man and like explosions and like a musical set and all this and
music.
We made a quick little teaser. And he winds up, you know, instead of talking about Scorsese and this movie he's going to make, he shows him that instead. And Cranston just loves it. It's the greatest thing in the world.
There's no story. Nothing. There's just a picture of a video.
Cool guy and music and explosions. And it's the best thing in the world.
And Cranston says, oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. We're great. This is awesome. What's the story? And
then he tells him Stoller's story.
Right.
Yeah. Tells them Nick Stoller's story, which is this kind of, you know,
Kool-Aid lives in like a land of like Velveeta and like Kraft mac and cheese.
Land of logos and there's four colors of Kool-Aid. And
we get all the flavors in, so it's, you know, everybody's
very diverse. Yeah. Yes, it's just perfect. It's totally Hollywood, right? It's Pixar and it's everything all together. And oh, and by the way, what about this $10 million you paid for this crazy Jonestown script to Scorsese? Oh, that's so he won't. No one will ever make that movie.
Yeah,
which is just putting a stake in the heart of one of the greatest filmmakers in America.
Because you can't make a movie about people drinking Kool-Aid, and also make the movie about the Kool-Aid Man.
Yes, so. Correct. Right. So maybe in real life, in the real world, you would, you know, 10 years from now, you would, you know, you've already come out with a blockbuster, but then 10 years from now, you make this last movie, last script of Scorsese's because you own it, right?
Yep.
And so he's totally flip-flopped. Seth Rogen's flip-flopped. So they got to get rid of, so they've already gotten rid of Stoller early on, but now they got to get him back. And the only way they can get him back is going to Catherine O'Hara, who's the fired former head of the studio, and she already had like I can't remember what her relationship with Nick Stoller, but Seth Rogen has to go to her house and basically plead and make a deal with her to get Nick Stoller back on this project. And Catherine O'Hara is, I already see an Emmy for her from this, a nomination. She is so great as this veteran movie producer, studio head, who's now been kicked to the sidelines. She lives in some high hilltop mansion overlooking Hollywood, Los Angeles, and she's just totally just in depression because she's been pushed aside. And she was like him, like Seth Rogen at one point. She was making all these
big decisions,
artsy-fartsy movie. Yep, and making bad decisions, and now she's gone. So Seth Rogen and she says this moment with her crying and whining and squealing and yelling and screaming at Seth Rogen is just, it's Emmy worthy. Yeah. It's just so great. It reminded me of a few people, but so she finally makes a deal. She gets a separate deal working for the studio as a producer on some separate projects. And so they get Nick Stoller back. And now they're deaf. What are they at the end of the movie? At the end of the show, they have to, end of the episode, they have to somehow, they're going to just let Martin Scorsese flop in the wind. Except they run into him at a party at Charlize Theron's house. And he figures it out pretty immediately that they dumped him and there's something weird. And it's so cringeworthy and so uncomfortable. And then as they're leaving the party, they also run into, of course, the star that would have been of that movie, Steve Buscemi, who, of course, the studio hated already as a concept, as a leading man. It is quite funny.
They were sitting around the room talking about this big artsy movie they're going to make. And they're like, who is going to pay to see this movie? No one. No one wants to see this movie. And they're talking about Buscemi. And no one can say his name correctly. And Catherine Hahn's like, how am I marketing this when there isn't anybody in this room who even knows how to say the guy's name?
Catherine Hahn, by the way, is on like, I don't know what the hell she's on this show.
She's on a higher level. But what's interesting is they do a callback when they meet Buscemi. They say his name wrong and he corrects them because they still don't know what his name is.
Those little things are so freaking great. They're so great. Angie said earlier about the Marx Brotherian way.
Oh my God.
It's kind of shot. There's a lot of scenes are very long. It's one shot, right? And there are a lot of running. There's just running. It's just they're frenetic. running in the studio, running down a hall.
If the Marx Brothers had the tech they have today, the movable cameras and all this crazy stuff. Can you imagine what a Marx Brothers movie would be like?
Oh, it'd be almost like
they were already insane.
Yes, with two cameras.
Yeah, just imagine. Just imagine what they would be like today.
With two stationary cameras. Uh-huh. There's a scene. There's what I cannot remember what happens. I believe it's in the first episode when Seth Rogen is running up stairs with his assistant, who ultimately becomes, I think her name is Chase Sweet Wonders. She plays Quinn Hackett. She's Matt's assistant, but then he elevates her to creative something or other. He's running up the stairs to his office and he trips, if you notice, at one of the very top steps. I'm sure that's not in the script, but they just kept going. And it's that's very madcap. You just keep going. It's one shot. Whatever happens, happens. And he doesn't stop. He just keeps going.
I don't know if that's true because he falls in every one of these episodes.
That's true. This is not
everything. So I'm wondering, like, was that was that an accident or is that the first of the falls?
Maybe because he's just falls. So clumsy. He's clumsy. He's so clumsy.
Yeah.
So clumsy.
I thought in the third episode, I was thinking, there's a very Dick Van Dyke quality to him. You know, he's he's bumbling, right? He's bumping into things. He's just a little bit, his body moves faster than he is and he can't control. He's like the bull in the china shop.
It's a lot like all the great comic pairs, the two of them are Marx Brothers-y. They're a little Abbott Costello-y. They're a little, Martin and Lewis, the Dick Van Dykes, like everything, they're like stealing from everyone in this, and but it plays really well. That frenetic, overly energetic, kind of crazy banter back and forth, and the physical comedy really works.
Frenetic is great, and we didn't talk about Ike Barinholtz. Ike Barinholtz is Sal Saperstein.
Yeah,
who's executive, very close friend. You can almost argue that they're best friends. He and Seth Rogen. And he was hoping that he was going to get the studio head job, lead job, and he didn't get it. So he's whatever he is, an executive. So there, and he's a little more buttoned down, but he's really knows things. He's, right. you know, he's been around the tracks, and his banter with Seth Rogen is great. Them together in every episode is just hilarious. That, you know, if it was a, they could do a buddy cop film together. These guys would be amazing. And you're right. They're Abbott Costello. Yep. They're you name it. They're just a great tandem together. It's a really funny first episode, which I was just, whoa, I'm in. I'm sold. I can't wait for the next episode. It's so great. And I was surprised that my wife actually loved it too. We were both laughing out loud as we.
I'm watching it with number two son. He seems to enjoy it as well.
Yeah, so. I've recommended to quite a few.
You know, people it also already, has to so. Feel like what's his name, David O. Russell. You know, like
yeah,
it's got that kind of just crazy yes. energy. Yeah. Like Flirting with yeah. Disaster or Silver Linings Playbook. Just that yeah. lots of energy. The music's going crazy. The music actually starts to make you nuts after a while.
A little bit. Because
it's
yeah.
just like, oh my God, with the drumming. It's like Whiplash for a couple seconds.
Yeah. yeah.
It's giving yeah, me yeah. Whiplash. I'm like, oh my God.
It's a really, as crazy as it is. It's a really great homage to Hollywood, to filmmaking. I mean, it definitely skewers a lot of the business side of things and just the details that go into making a film, the behind the scenes stuff that we generally don't see. But it also, there is a love of film. There's a love of movies. And Seth Rogen, you can tell, is a movie lover. And his character is a real movie lover. He believes in directors. He believes in storytelling, and he wants that to be his mark on this studio. Whether that happens, we will find out in future episodes. So, episode one, the studio Apple TV Plus. Yep. It was called The Promotion, by the way, that episode. Why don't we take a break here and maybe hop on another whiskey, and we'll talk about episode two next.
Sure. Twist my arm. Sure.
Twist. Mike, what you got?
I got the same one.
Are you staying the same?
Same way. Still Henry McKenna, single barrel, bottle and bond.
You know, especially in this crazy time we're in, maybe a little whiskey talk here for a sec. People have been asking me for quite a while, you know, of course, you know, recommendations on whiskeys and things. And I always, if you don't want to spend a lot of money, and if you like bourbon, this is the greatest time to buy bourbon yeah. and bourbon and rye. There is so much good bourbon and rye on the shelves in America at really inexpensive prices. I don't know what that McKenna cost.
It might have been 45 tops, you know.
Yeah.
It's not 45 it's a bottle tops. And bond, which is again, like a better bourbon, and it That's still right. wasn't very expensive.
Yeah. No, the Heaven Hill Bottle and Bond at Costco is, I think, $39.
Yeah, they.
I mean, you cannot. They
have articles every year where it comes out, and it's basically, you know, if you're drinking, if you're spending more than $50 for a bottle of bourbon, you're probably doing it wrong.
You're
paying
not.
For a name or a label, and yeah. you can find. Many, many quality bourbons for a lot, lot less.
Oh my God. You can go down to the $20 yep. level and yep. get an Evan Williams that is pretty yep. darn decent.
Evan Williams single barrel.
Great for cocktails.
Or Four Roses.
Yeah.
Or Four Roses. Four Roses. Yeah.
I mean, they're delicious.
And you know, we've also talked about how they've been overproducing.
Yeah, so it's only going to get cheaper Kentucky. Probably when they start getting rid of this stuff.
Yeah, for import, now they can't send it anywhere, so they'll be
able nope, to. It's got to stay here.
Bring on the tariffs. Right? Bring on the tariffs.
You know what? You might be able to get that Blanton's for $60 again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't send it anywhere.
I think that high-end stuff is probably not going to come down, but the lower-end stuff, I mean, I think it's there's just so much of it they've got.
Okay.
Or you might see something that comes out for an older age. Where typically bourbon
is aged
for longer periods of time. And you might see a yep. few age statement now.
Can't say it.
Because there'll be a glut.
Yep.
Can't say it.
What do you got?
It is the High West Yippee-ki-yay.
Oh, yeah. I haven't had that in a long time.
I feel like a rootin' tootin' cowboy.
Rootin' tootin' ready for shooting?
Sure.
Or are you, you know, going and throwing out a Bruce Willis movie with your Yippee-ki-yay? You're falling out of the Nakatomi Tower?
A little, what the hell's that movie? Die Hard.
Christmas movie.
The great Christmas movie.
Something's chirping in my house. It's annoying me.
Is it a mouse?
No, it's by a smoke detector.
No, I wouldn't worry about it.
Just a smoke detector. Chirping. Don't worry about that. Yeah,
stay low.
Chirping. Just pour your drink on it.
Chirping.
What are you heading in for?
I have...
Oh, that's nice.
This one's kind of getting low on the... Let's see. I can't even get... There we go. This is an 8-year-old Kilcarran.
Oh, Kilcarran.
From Glengyle. Yeah. This is 8-year-old. This is pretty old. This is one of their first batches, I believe. This is cast strength, 56.2. Nothing fancy about it, but finally getting through it. Got a few more drams out of that one.
Yeah, so that's the way I got, you know, we redid the kitchen. And as we shuffled things around, I don't think I lost space. I just kind of reconfigured the space. So I didn't have as much room for as many bottles. So I had to go through a lot more inventory to say, you know what? Don't open new. Work on what you have here. And
that's what I'm...
Stop with your eclectic taste. Finish something. Move
yes,
on.
Yes.
So
yes.
It feels like a little more work.
It feels like all of my Lafroy car chases are all at that one inch.
Not necessarily
level.
A drag, but maybe three glasses. No. And maybe I should take those as my next three and get rid of a bottle.
Yes.
and not open the new car chase and start drinking that one.
I've been on that for quite a while. I've actually been giving away a couple of bottles here and there that are down low and say, hey, you know what? You can have the rest of this. Okay. We're all reloaded. We're going to talk about episode 2 of the studio. I just love the name of it. And I like, by the way, the graphics, the opening graphics and the closing.
It's like something
like 1970s look to it. 60s. Yeah.
Yep. I love it. Yeah. It's great. Okay. So episode 2, it's a little more, maybe a little more complicated. Give a little synopsis.
Talk a little bit.
No, I have a longer one.
I'll find it. Hold on a second. Let me see. Episode 2 is the Wonder. The filming of an intricate sunset shot becomes complicated by Matt's set visit because he just can't help himself.
No. So, again, we have an episode where... Okay, so Matt's in the job now. Matt. Seth Rogen. And he likes to be hands-on. He wants to be on set. He wants when he can. And this is a, whatever movie this is, Sarah Polley is the director. And it is it's being shot at a Hollywood Hills mansion of some sort. And it's at sunset. And she is trying to get that last final one shot. No edits. And Greta Lee is the star. And she's going to be walking across a pool area and then ultimately getting to her car. It's the very last shot of this movie. Matt has to go see this. Seth Rogen has to go see this. He has to witness this. He needs to be there. And his partner tells him, do not do this. Do not do this. Ike Barinholtz tells him, you are crazy. We can go drinking at the Dresden. It'd be better to go drinking than you getting on the set, because when the studio heads on the set, everyone's like, and I bow down to you. You know, everyone's on their tippy toes. It's just gonna make everyone nervous. Let's not do this. No. I'll be fine.
They won't even know I'm there.
And you talk about Marx Brotherhood. This becomes very, very Marx Brotherhood. And you're gonna say something?
No.
Oh. So they park, they get up to the Hollywood Hill, up this little one-way street, one-lane street in the hills, park with this house where everything's being filmed. They go in there. Sarah Polley's behind the camera and behind the video, the monitor, and behind her is also Catherine O'Hara. And Catherine O'Hara's just livid that Seth Rogen is here. She cannot handle. She just like freaking out. You cannot be here. You're gonna screw everything up. And of course, you know, he does ultimately. And
ultimately, over and over again.
Yeah,
over and over again.
He makes a mess.
To start off with, when he gets out of the car, he's in a suit, and and Ike Barinholtz says, you know, you're in a suit. Or maybe you realize that he's in a suit and just, I shouldn't be in a suit. I need to be like cool like everybody else is. So he goes, he wants to get a change of clothing while he's there. And of course they have costumes, right? They have a little wardrobe department on set. And so he goes and puts on whatever the wardrobe guy gives him. So he's dressed down. He's kind of more casual looking. And that's kind of the beginning of the hell that's going to take place the rest of the way. Anyone want to jump in?
Go ahead, Mike.
So he goes in and he starts talking to the director, who's trying to get a shot of a certain sunset. So there's like a 5-minute window, and he spends 3 minutes talking about the wonder, the special shot, and mentions every movie that's ever had one, and eats up all the time. And she's tolerating the discussion because she needs him to give her $800,000 so she can license a Stone song.
A Rolling Stone song.
And while she's listening to him, offside, you have Catherine Harris' character talking to Ike Barinholtz's character saying, everyone is going to suck up to him because everybody wants something. Why is he here? He's going to ruin this. and then it cuts back to him, and she's just listening to everything he says and taking notes from him and all this other nonsense. And the one thing he says is, I love a callback. And I was watching the dailies, and in the very beginning, the character is smoking a joint. And wouldn't it be great if at the very end, the character was smoking a joint again? And this sets everybody off. The director now, Sarah Polley, now feels like, oh, I got to incorporate this stupid note because I want him to give me money to buy this Stone saw, which creates an even further delay because now they got to get someone to make up a joint to give to the actress so that she can go do these things.
Right. Greta Lee is the actress who walks across the scene. The first take on this with the sun going down, the joint is lit, but it goes out. So they have to start over. And so they have to get, you know, relight it and start over. And the second attempt, Greta Lee runs into Seth Rogen, and as Catherine O'Hara pointed out, everybody's going to want something from you, so everyone's going to be nice. And she wants to go on a promotional tour using the corporate jet when the movie's finally released, Greta Lee. And she mentions how she loves this callback.
Yep.
Bookend. And how she loves that idea of having the joint come back again. Oh my God. And your idea? Oh my God. What a great idea. More sucking up to the studio head. That's amazing. And he's, this is great. So it's falls apart rapidly throughout this whole thing. He wants the production assistants, a kid, wants to suck up to him too. He gets him clothing. He wants to get him, coffee. And of course, you know, getting coffee on set is, great. I'll have this whatever, blah, 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 oat milk, frappuccino, da, 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 drink. And he's got to get this coffee. And they decide, the higher ups, Catherine Harrod, to actually move him away from ground zero. They want to move him to his own little perch where he can watch on a monitor away from everyone else and not be disruptive.
His video village. His own video village.
His own video village, correct. And of course, that lasts about 5 seconds. He's making a mess. He wants to be in the middle of everything. He's too loud. That's one of the reasons. The first I think it's the first take or the second take. He's just so loud, and Greta Lee can hear him whispering from afar. She's outside. He's inside the house. He's just being annoying, and he has no clue. He just thinks it's fine.
Well, in the first take, they get through the whole take, and at the very end of the take, she's got to take a drink and throw it in a guy's face. And they got to change his wardrobe, and Seth Rogen's wearing his wardrobe.
That's right.
So then they have to get another set of clothes for him instead. And this whole time, we've got 5 minutes to do this, and every mistake he makes is eating up more and more this time.
Correct. So finally, he kind of gets it. He has to. He knows he really cannot be on set. He's creating all these problems. He says it early on in the episode, he really has to go to the bathroom. So he finally agrees with Ike Barinholtz. They're going to leave, but he has to go to the bathroom first. And he's in this change of clothing, this pair of pants that he keeps complaining about. And he goes to the bathroom and he can't get the zipper down. He's, it's a problem. And he finally is done. He walks out of this bathroom, which is a bathroom in this house where this shot being done. He walks out, he turns to the right, and Greta Lee is walking towards him, and he thinks, because he just had a conversation with her, that she's coming to talk to him. And he just starts talking to her. Except that's the middle of the middle of the shot. And behind him is a whole camera crew. And he's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And he just runs. Falls over a table or something.
Big glass table, breaks it all, bar cart, whatever.
He falls over. He's got this broken glass and broken nose and blood and everything. So they have to reset this whole thing up again. He's bleeding. They have to do this one. They're going to try to do this one last. They have one last chance at this shot. And he's, everyone's just sucking up to him. Some medical person's on site, and he's trying to fix his nose while they're, he's supposed to be being quiet behind the monitor. He's, ouch, that hurts. He's really in pain. Sarah Pauly is just like dying that this is, not working right. And they finally, get this last version of last edit going. It's going well. It's going great. And her character has to walk through the house outdoors and to a car to leave the premises. She gets to the car. She gets in the car. She can't, and then she can't go anywhere because Seth Rogen parked his car in front of hers with the license plate that says STD.
Head.
ATD, which he thought meant studio head, but it actually was, everyone says it as STD head. And of course, can't find his keys because his keys are in his pants, which are now in the wardrobe area because he'd switched pants. So he has to run in, find his pants, find the keys. There's a million pairs of pants that look the same. And he and Ike Barinholtz finally drive off into the sunset. And they find
they missed the sunset.
They blew the sunset. They get a phone call from Sarah Pauly who says they didn't get from Sarah or from maybe Catherine Herr, that they didn't get the shot.
What's great is as they're coming down the driveway from the house, you can see the sun setting.
It's dark,
and you hear him say, "You think they got the shot?" His buddy's like, "Oh yeah, they got the shot. They got the shot."
Hey, by the way, speaking of the Dresden, weren't you there recently?
I'm sorry.
Didn't you go to the Dresden recently?
I've never been inside the Dresden. Oh. I've been by it a million times.
You went somewhere.
I want to go. You went... It's in Silver Lake.
Oh, but you went to some. You went to some famous one of the bars, didn't you?
Where'd
you go? What's the other one?
He hangs out at the Viper Room, right?
That's right.
Not the Viper.
That's
room.
Right.
Oh yeah, I know the other one I was at. I know you're talking about. I'll think of it. It's on. Melrose. I'll think of it. I know what you're talking about. No, another old Hollywood. Yeah. So another madcap, crazy episode. And of course, it's all about Seth Rogen really loving movies, but too much. Yeah. He cannot stop himself.
Like a big kid.
Yes.
Where he just can't separate his job from his love.
Right. Is that the word? He's like a smother.
No.
Not a mother, a smother.
Yeah, he smothers and he
micromanages.
A ruiner.
Micromanages. He's a ruiner. He's a micromanager, but not in the way of an annoying manager. He's in love with this craft. He's really romantic. He really loves this whole process, and he wants to be a part of it in some way. And he doesn't see that he's doing bad. A micromanager, like an executive, is going to really be control freak.
It would almost be better if he was a micromanager.
Maybe.
It probably would be.
Instead, he's just a meddler. He just seems to ruin everything.
And
what was interesting,
he doesn't even know it.
It's the very beginning of it. They mentioned that if they don't get this shot, they lose Greta Lee for 10 days or something because she's got to go do something else. And yes. He ruins everything. And you're like, well, now they can't finish that movie because they got to wait for her to come back from wherever she was and try to get this shot again.
Yes. It's just a plethora of... Plethora of madcap mistakes.
Again, it's mistake on top mistake.
And it's all him. And it's all about getting this one shot. You get one chance at it. Well, really, I think you have three chances in this, but they ultimately don't get it. And she, at the very end, at one point, he finally gives in and says, Seth Rogen, she asked, can I get the $800,000 for the Stones movie, the Stones song? If you can't get, what's that song called?
You can't always get what you want.
Which is the ending song of the show and the episode. And he finally says yes, because he's done so many made so many stupid mistakes. He's got to say yes to this. And he says yes. He basically says yes to everybody throughout the whole episode. Right. And he's being walked over. So it'll be interesting to see how his character develops over the season. Does he grow? Does he get some backbone? Does he figure out that he's got to stay away? Or is it going to be just this kind of this craziness on every episode? Really funny. I laughed probably harder the second time when I watched it because I saw more things that I didn't see the first time.
Well, with all that energy and how fast this thing is moving, it's easy to miss stuff.
Yeah, you missed something.
Because you're just trying to follow the plot. Yeah, then the second time, you could pay attention to the details.
Yeah.
I wish we had the dialogue for the episode. Catherine O'Hara is so funny because she's sitting in a second row of chairs behind Sarah Polley and the assistant director as they're watching the scene take place on a monitor with headsets. And whatever Seth Rogen does or says, behind him is Catherine O'Hara with some little short comment that is so biting and so funny. It is, but she's whispering it because you're not supposed to be loud. You're supposed to be quiet on set. And she's just so good. She's just great. I just think she's so funny in the whole scene, the whole episode, the whole series so far. Any other thoughts on that one, guys?
Oh, it was great. It was just ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. And it was so much, it was even more frenetic than the first episode.
It was
even more crazy most definitely. Than the first episode.
Yes.
Which you wouldn't think it can get any crazier, but it does.
Yeah. And the concept of it's really great too, because that kind of, you know, that, Whatever the scene is, that one, all scenes in a movie, you know, you want that scene to be perfect as a director, and you don't need all this nuttiness going on around you. And the bull in the china shop comes in, who happens to be the studio head, and that alone makes it sort of, you know, like when your boss comes into the room, right? Everyone's changed, and that his presence alone is bad, but then his personality and his actions make it 1,000 times worse. so much worse. So episode 2 of the studio, The Oneer. We just went through that one. A reminder to everybody, this is What We Watch When We Drink. Boozedancing.com is our live stream podcast. You'll be able to download this one in about a week or so and listen somewhere. And don't forget that you can watch these two gentlemen on screen with me at the murder table, reviewing all kinds of spirits and on a pretty often basis on our website, boozedancing.com, and all of our social medias. And should we get a third whiskey now, or should we just go into episode 3?
Well, I got a third whiskey, so I'm going.
Third whiskey it is.
We're going.
There was, Mike, we know what yours is. Is it the McKenna Ball and Bond?
Henry McKenna, single barrel Ball yes. and Bond.
Oh, wow. What a shock.
It looks very similar to the last two.
Really? Well, look at that. Shockingly. Maybe it's the third expression.
Shockingly.
Very similar.
Oh, I'm up in the ante on this one.
What's this
I'm
one?
Trying not to
Well, this is from our fine friends at Barrel Bourbon.
Oh, the...
oh, whoa.
This is a Barrel Vantage, a blend of straight bourbon whiskeys finished in, wait for it, Mizunara, French, and toasted American oak.
What was that called?
It's Barrel Vantage.
Barrel Vantage.
And it comes in at a, you know, humble 57.22%.
Hey now.
So, soft whiskey with a 5.
Very soft.
Wow. Soft. And that was from the
Barrel Craft Spirits.
Mark Gillespie.
Yes.
But from the Mark Gillespie.
Stash.
I was going to say bazaar. flea market.
Yes.
The free for all.
Yeah, exactly.
The free for all.
That was it. It was a battle royal.
Yeah.
It was a battle royal. Oh my God!
I have a I have another single cask nation. I have an. I don't know what year was this one from? This is an 8-year-old Kalila, 61.4%. This is 8 years in a refill Oloroso sherry butt, bottled in 2019. One of 480 bottles. It's Kalila. I like Kalila, so I'm having Kalila, and I may go back to the Kalila. Ooh, it's lovely.
Oh my
now, this one's another bottle-ish kill for me. It's another 1-inch. Oh, my. Another 1-inch.
Oh, my.
Oh, my good that's or oh, my bad?
Yeah, that's kind of funky. That's
so had you not had that before?
No.
Aaron, you need a dregs night.
I do.
Yeah, I know. I've been, like you, Mike, I've been pulling out the short ones as much as possible. Yep. And I never finish one.
Yep. You need a dregs night to finish them all off.
Yes, indeed.
Fill the recycle bin.
Delicious. Yeah. Well, there's nothing better than getting one of a bottle. Oh my gosh, it's the best these days. In the old days, it was nothing better than getting a bottle. Now, there's nothing better than getting rid of a bottle.
Well, then I get to open one.
All righty.
It's a twofer.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Episode 3, which came out last week of the studio. Again, this is on Apple TV Plus. The studio is Seth Rogen, Ike Barinholtz, Catherine Hahn, Catherine O'Hara, and Chase Swee Wonders, it's a really nice, by the way, talking casting, it's a nice group of 5. They're the main group. And then you've got all these people that we're going to, the rotating folks that are going to come in and out.
Yeah, the extended cameos. Yeah.
Extended cameos, and we may or may not see other folks from the studio. We had Bryan Cranston in the first episode as the president or CEO of the company, but we haven't seen anyone else from the studio. So we'll see if those folks show up at some point. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Okay. Episode 3 is called The Note. And do you have anything on The Note?
Matt,
this is a very interesting episode.
Matt feels nervous about giving legendary director Ron Howard a difficult piece of feedback. The Note.
Yep, that's a very good note. Yeah. That's a very good synopsis.
What I loved is the experience everyone has when you go to the movies and they keep doing the cutaway to say, if 15 minutes in, 45 minutes in, an hour and a half, 2 hours in, and it's the, you know, the movie's so great, the movie's so great, the movie's so great. And the point of this one is, at 2 hours, it's a great movie. And they get up to leave, and there's 45 more minutes of the movie. And the note is, get rid of the last 45 minutes.
Yes.
And it's, who's going to deliver the note? How are we going to deliver it? What are we supposed to do? And it, the whole premise was just, you know, you made a great movie, and then you ruined it. So you got to fix this. Get rid of it.
Well, it was funny, though, correct, because with this episode, I thought it got a little tedious towards the middle. But then they just kind of, they turned it around, and it just revved it up, and it just, they stuck the landing, as they say.
They seem to have too many people who didn't want to deliver the note. If they had just cut one more, like, one less person to say no, I think it would have been a little sharper.
Right.
But they picked it up at the end. They really picked it up.
I got a little concerned. I was like, oh, my God, is this going to keep going like this?
Yeah.
It's starting to drive me crazy.
Yeah, then, it's almost the same joke over and over again.
But then they pulled it back together again, and it was pretty damn good, I have to say.
So Ron Howard is the director of this movie, and as Mike said, these four folks, not Catherine O'Hara, are watching a screening of the film for the first time in a private studio on the Continental Studios lot. And they just are excited about it. It's Ron Howard. He's great. He's won Academy Awards. He's just amazing. And as Mike said, they go through this movie, and at 2 hours, it ends. It feels like it ends, and it's just awesome. And they're all excited. And then there's another 45 minutes. It's almost a different movie. Yeah. The other 45 minutes. And the movie stars Anthony Mackie. Isn't he in some Marvel movies or?
Well, the movies are Rocker, a bunch of different things.
Okay. I'm not totally familiar with it. But he's the other major cameo in this. And they all walk away from seeing this movie that the 45 minutes at the end are just fluff. The marketing. Yep. Catherine Hahn said, I can't sell this movie. It's too long. It's boring. No one's going to sit through this. We're going to lose, you know, two showings of it per day because it's too long, and it's not going to sell. And we got to tell them. And as studio head, Matt, Seth Rogen, has to tell them.
That's your job.
That's his job.
That's your job.
It's your job. And of course he can't do it because that's Matt. So he passes the buck.
He can't tell them for a certain reason though.
Well, we know that at the end.
He wants to leave a note later. To Ron Howard.
Yes. We find that out later. He tries to get, first he tries to do it himself. He does try to do it himself, and he can't do it. He just falls apart, doesn't do it with meeting Ron Howard in the lobby. He can't do it. And then he goes back up and tries to get his assistant, Chase Sweet Wonders, Quinn, to do it. And she's, I'll do it. You guys are a bunch of wusses. I'm going to do it. She's like the new young brash kid. I'm going to do it. She goes down to tell him, Ron Howard, except Anthony Mackie walks into the door, and she's just totally
starstruck.
Starstruck. She can't put two words together. All she can, she's, oh my God, you're an amazing actor.
I love your acting.
She cannot put two words together that makes sense. And she can't give the note that she was going to give to Ron Howard.
Very similar to the last way I would do whiskey. I just can't give the note. I just love whiskey. I do. I love whiskey.
See, that's a bookend for this whole show, this episode. And then Seth Rogen talks to Catherine O'Hara, who is a producer of this film. And she knows for herself that is 40 last 45 minutes is killer. It's death. But she can't tell him Ron Howard either. And no one should, because this movie is so personal. And she tells Seth Rogen why it's so personal. And it's so personal because the last 45 minutes are basically an homage to a deceased cousin of Ron Howard's in real life. And that's why he made this movie. Oh no, that's really tough. How are you going to get out of that? Seth Rogen tells his little group of folks that's the problem. And he has an idea. Maybe someone that has a dead cousin in this group can, you know, kind of relate to Ron Howard and kind of get him to understand that this is not the best way to have an homage to your cousin. And no one has a dead cousin. So our boy, Ike Barinholtz, lies to Ron Howard and says he has a dead cousin. And this is, so he really understands the meaning of this movie. And it's really tough. And, but he can't really give him the note either. So strike three, right? Three people can't say, give him the note. And then there's a big marketing or a big meeting with like the executives and marketing people and all about how they're going to market this movie. And this is when Seth Rogen's finally going to do it. He's going to finally tell Ron Howard why. But he's already, he has this background in this with Ron Howard that he thinks Ron Howard doesn't remember. 20 years before, he has seen a test screening of A Beautiful Mind. Is that right?
Yeah, Beautiful Mind. Yeah.
And everyone, all these direct famous directors are there, and everyone loved this movie. And somehow they, does anyone have any notes for Ron Howard? Kind of more of a joke. And Seth Rogen says, yeah, I have a note. And he's basically, I can't remember what the note was about.
The note was that basically that the Paul Bettany character was like, you know, a figment of his own imagination.
But let everybody in early that they all know it's a figment of his imagination.
Throughout the movie, right. Not the big kicker at the end, right. And Ron Howard, I guess, flipped out at that, couldn't believe it, and, you know, laid down the law at that 20 years ago, that meeting. So there they have history. And they're in this group meeting, and Ron Howard's talking about this, and he brings this up about how this little Seth Rogen, who was starting out his career, brought up this whole thing to me 20 years ago about my movie, A Beautiful Mind. And he's saying this in front of this entire conference room of people.
And he's cursing him out and yelling and dropping
him out and making fun of him and basically talking about, did you give the same note to? It mentions every movie with a plot twist ever.
Every.
Says, did you say they should have done this? Fun. Did you go up to M. Night Shyamalan and say, hey, what if everyone, one of the ghosts just said, hey, when's Bruce Willis going to know he's dead? And what I love in that whole scene is Anthony Mackie off to the side agrees with them that the movie's too long and that whole last scene doesn't work and it needs to get cut. But then in that particular scene when Ron Howard's just going off on Seth Rogen's character, he jumps in and does it too. And Seth Rogen looks to him and says, what are you doing? He's like, oh, but this is funny. This is funny. Oh, okay. Pile on.
And he's got a back end percentage on the movie too.
Cause he's a producer.
He's an actor producer. So Seth Rogen just freaking loses it and just goes off. And that's kind of the end of the episode.
He goes off and he stands up.
Yes.
And then he falls over again for his third fall on three shows because Ron Howard tries to go after him. And Ron Howard,
he throws his hat
at him. Everyone thinks is like the most affable person in the world, has to be held back from taking a swing at him. Which is just so funny because that's not Ron Howard. At least you don't think it is. Maybe that is.
That's
Ron
not Opie. That's not Richie Cunningham.
And he's dropping F-bombs and trying to go after him. And it's just so funny.
And Seth Rogen does a walk later after this scene. And he's walking alone, mirroring the book ending.
This
45 minutes of the movie where it's just basically Anthony Mackie and a little kid walking in various places and looking up at the sky and looking at pools of water and very melodramatic. And this is Seth Rogen doing exactly the same thing around the studio, and finally gets a phone call from Ron Howard, who apologizes for lashing out, and Seth Rogen apologizes, And Ron Howard agrees that 45 minutes is not necessary. Yep. And so that's a really interesting part of it too, because this arguably that means that movie's going to do well.
Right.
Because that
movie is going to
be cut out.
Yeah.
Right. We don't know what happens in the movie in the previous episode, but we know that this movie is going to be made the right way and probably do very well.
But the end of the call is great, though, where Ron Howard recaps and it says,
yes.
So I say I'm wrong, and then you say you're wrong, and then we're good. And then finishes like, but if you ever mess with me again, and he like, again, threatens to kill him and all, you're just like,
you'll never work in this town again. Yes.
Ron Howard is so mean.
It's great because it's Ron Howard, right? America's favorite kid.
We could do a later episode with Tom Hanks going after him because he's another guy that everyone thinks is the greatest guy in the world. Tom lays him out. Great episode.
I read an article, or maybe it was on Stern, I can't remember which, where Seth Rogen was talking about Scorsese and Ron Howard. He never met either. Right. They never met. Him and his partner, Evan Goldberg, had never met them. And they're larger than life to the Scorsese for sure.
Even though he's very small.
And
he's very small.
He's very small. And they weren't even sure this. I think Seth Rogen said, we weren't really even sure if Scorsese knew who we were. Because man's like 80 something, right? Ron Howard, he's just, a really nice guy. Again, does he know who we are? And they've never met, and he just agrees to do this and play this like outlandish version of himself. And they both said yes to this, and it's really kudos to the team of the studio, Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen and company, to be able to get these kinds of people to agree to come onto this show and either make fun of themselves or be made fun of or whatever in these episodes. It's just great. Because if it was just a regular actor playing a director, it wouldn't be as good. It would not be as funny if it was somebody playing a guy like Ron Howard.
Yeah, and I think because you probably have a preconceived notion of who these people are, to see them play some blown up ridiculous portion of themselves is just it's just hysterical.
It's hysterical.
Like when you see Scorsese and they're telling him, you bought my movie and you killed my deal. And then they cut to Buscemi, and Buscemi's telling him, it's so great you're doing this. This is his last movie. What an honor it is for all of us to be involved in this movie. And then as they leave Buscemi, you hear him going, Martin, are you crying? Because you don't think Martin Scorsese is going to cry. He makes mob movies. He doesn't cry.
Actually,
are you crying?
You know what would have been great? Have you both seen Taxi Driver?
Yeah.
You know the scene where he's in the cab, in the back seat of the car, and he's talking about the 44 Magnum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he's watching this, basically this other guy sleeping with his wife. If he would have gone off like that, that would have been a spectacular callback.
Yes, it would have been.
Would have been fun.
Oh, I think it's great where he's just sitting there crying.
Oh, it was great. It was good.
Scorsese doesn't cry. He's Scorsese.
No. Yeah, it's really great with the ongoing callbacks, bookends, whatever you want to call them, and having this kind of big names of Hollywood be a part of the show really lend a lot of credence and value to it.
They're also,
it makes it really funny.
It helps that they're all sucking up to Apple Studios because they got like deep pockets.
Yeah.
No doubt.
When Seth Rogen calls, they don't pick up. But when Apple calls, they pick up twice.
Yeah. Oh, wait, you got what? How many trillions of dollars? Oh, okay. Okay. Whatever you want, Apple.
Twice.
Well,
the other thing that I think is funny is that it actually looks like they're making some sort of like little trailer movies of these movies. Like the thing with Ron Howard with Anthony Mackie.
Yeah.
It looks like they actually made something.
You're right.
Well, you actually made some kind of little snippets of a movie here. This is great.
They did. Yes. Yeah. You're right. Crazy. They're making, actually go back to the first episode. The very first episode starts with a movie scene
right.
being shot
being shot.
Of,
yeah.
a, I don't know who that character is, or that if that person's the director. Someone is someone.
It's Peter Berg.
Who's the director?
That's right.
It's Peter Berg. That's right. And they're shooting a scene in the dead of winter. A bad guy gets shot. He's dying, and then some other bad guy comes up and finishes him off against a car with a gun. And it's snowing. It's blowing. And you don't know what this is. The very first episode of the studio, first scene of the first episode, and cut. And then all of a sudden, the director walks in, and you can see sunlight behind. It's fake snow. And the guy gets up, and the guy that gets shot, and he's, did I do that scene okay? And he's got blood coming from his nose, and then Seth Rogen walks in as a studio guy, not the studio head, the studio guy who wants to put his two cents in.
And they want nothing to do with him because he's not the head. A guy.
He's just a guy. He's just another student. He's another suit who walks in. Yep. Another suit. And, yeah, so what you said, Mike, they are making scenes of movies in this TV show, the studio, which really, and they're very real, and they're done very well. I mean, they're done like, you know, you're seeing it from the back end, you're seeing it from the director's point of view and the crew's point of view and maybe the actor's point of view, all for a reason, because you're trying to get the audience into a Hollywood set.
And the star of that movie is Paul Dano. He's an actor. He's been a lot of things. The star of the second movie is Greta Lee. The star of the third thing is Anthony Mackie and not James Franco, Franco's brother, Dave Franco. So it's like these are real actors who you can honestly see in real movies.
Yes.
You
know what I mean? Yes.
Like, It's not like they're just, again, bringing their friends in to do stuff. It's like, these are real people. No. And the directors are real directors. They're not just like...
It looks...
Peter Berg's a director.
It looks like...
You know...
Yeah.
Sarah Polley's a director. Ron Howard's a director. They're really directors.
It looks like a fun show to make, although very complicated. I heard Rogan talking about how complicated each episode is, the way they're shot. Because there are some really long scenes, but it's really fun. I mean, so three episodes, three for three, all fun, all funny. I can't wait for the fourth episode. I'll watch it after after we go off the air tonight. It's so fun.
I also wonder if a big part of this is that you're getting such big name people involved that the logistics for the amount of time they have to be in this, it's like you got us for like 4 hours on a Tuesday, and that's it.
Yeah,
that's what we got.
Maybe
I got to get back to my real job. I can't be doing this with you.
Yeah,
where it's not like a typical TV show where Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday we do a run through. On Friday we shoot. It's like they're probably doing snippets all week long of grabbing this person while I can get them before they're on to their next thing.
Yep. Let's talk a little bit about the castle, that the individuals. Seth Rogen has had a very interesting career, right? He started really young. He was doing stand-up comedy in Vancouver, like at the age of like 15 or something.
Yeah,
like
Freaks and Geeks.
And
he's another guy out of the Freaks and Geeks, right?
Yes.
Freaks and Geeks guy.
Just look at that cast. They're all stars.
They're all stars. And then he goes on, he just gets into the whole Apatow world, right? And does all those Apatow early kid movies. And then at some point, I don't know, maybe in the last 10 years, he decides to kind of get away from the screwball comedies and start making some serious comedies. And I think he's done a couple of serious movies too. He's been a little bit all over the place, and this is him kind of coming back to the screwball stuff, I think. But it's screwball with a lot of brains.
Yeah, I'd say this is more like the cerebral comedy kind of stuff you're into now.
Most definitely. Yes.
It's a much bigger deal.
Right. It's not about, you know, and even that's a lot of what he is today. It's not about pot smoking and being high all the time.
By the way, I look at his IMDb. He's got 59 producer credits, 126 acting credits. 31 writing credits. So he's a pretty prolific guy. I mean, the guy's working his
butt. Well, yes. And his writing partner, you know, the two of them make a lot of things together. Evan Goldberg. Right. They do a lot of stuff.
They do.
And they produce together, write together, and direct together.
A little fact about Evan Goldberg. I think they grew up together, as I recall. I'm not sure that. I would say pre-pandemic, a number of years ago, let's say 10 years ago, my family and I would go to a lot of places. We had a place here in my town where they, one night a week, there'd be at a school, there'd be a bunch of food trucks, and they'd have a band, and it was all about going to see the food truck, right? And one food truck that was there, kind of frequently, I believe, was a poutine food truck.
Ooh.
I know. Poutine. Who owned that poutine truck? Evan Goldberg.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. There's my Evan Goldberg story.
Last year we went down at spring training and we went to a Phillies Blue Jays game at the Blue Jay Stadium and they served poutine. So I had to get it. And my son and my wife were both like, "You are terrifying. You'll eat just anything, won't you?" that's the most disgusting thing ever.
No, that's not true because they haven't eaten with me.
It was so good.
Well, that's true. It is the best. That is the best.
You'll eat anything.
Okay,
Mike.
So we got.
I'll eat anything plus the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
Oh, yum, yes. Yum.
They don't eat innards. You're about the innards. No innards.
The Seth Rogen is just a funny guy. I mean, he's a funny guy we don't see him in real life, but you can imagine he's a funny guy just sitting around talking, right? He's a funny guy in talk shows. He's a funny guy. One of the best episodes of Dave Chang's live cooking show, oddly enough, was with Evan Goldberg, with Seth Rogen and Ike Barinholtz. It's two guests per episode, and Chang cooks for them. The two of those guys, and we had no idea at the time that this studio thing, this is at least a year ago, that these guys would be coming up with this show, or it probably was already being done. They were just hilarious together, the two of them. Ike Barinholtz is a funny guy on his own. He was most known for being on the Mindy Project, the Mindy Kaling sitcom for 3 or 4 years. He was this crazy nurse on the show. He's so, so funny. He's hilarious. Weird thing about his family is his dad is a judge, a real judge. And he's done a little bit of side acting.
The dad?
And that show, his dad. Okay. His dad's probably in his 70s. He's a real judge. And there was that show that came out last year that was kind of a reality show where they took a guy who's here in L.A., and they put him on a jury.
Oh, it was the thing with James Marsden.
Oh, the juror.
Where everybody's
James Marsden,
the guy. He thinks he's really on jury duty, but he's not. And everyone in it is an
jury. It was called jury.
Right. But everybody's an actor.
Who was the judge?
He was the judge, right?
Ike Barinholtz. Yeah. Ike Barinholtz's dad.
Spoiler alert.
Who was
awesome. I've seen episode 4. He's in episode 4.
Oh, Judge Ike's dad? Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Well, we didn't talk about, I don't know much about, what's her name? Chase Swee Wonders. I don't know her at all. Catherine Hahn, you guys know her probably than I do. She's just a star in this thing. She reminds me a little bit, her frenetic attitude, her yelling and screaming, her noisiness reminds me a bit of Elaine on Seinfeld. So a little bit like, Julie Louis-Dreyfus. She's great.
Yeah, but like Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
I know I've seen her a million times. I don't know where I've seen her, but you know, she's very funny.
She's in Bad Moms, which is a great comic ensemble.
She's in Step Brothers. She's hysterical.
She's in Step Brothers playing the sister-in-law.
What was the one? What was the Marvel one?
She's in
a couple of Marvel.
She's in Marvel. Yeah.
She was just in the last one. Agatha All Along, and before that she was in the one with Scarlet Witch.
Right.
So okay. She's been in, she's got a good bit of work behind her, and a lot of it's varied, but she usually plays a character not quite there. A little bit different for dramatic effect or for comedic effect, but she's very
And last of the main group, Catherine O'Hara, she's just, you know, SCTV stalwart. Last bit of amazing stuff was Schitt's Creek, where she was amazing. But she was in many movies, Home Alone, all the Home Alones, and whatever else. She's just, she's aged as an actress amazingly well, as a comedic actress. She's as funny now as not doing skits as she was when she was doing skits.
She's awesome. And by the way, we share a birthday.
Oh, really? That's very nice.
So that's just great. Saying.
She's that's younger awesome. Than you, though, right?
Yes. Isn't everybody?
She's a little younger.
Except Aaron. Isn't everybody?
Except me. Yes. Yes. Well, the studio on Apple Plus TV, we highly recommend it. I from what we
at least for the about, for the first three episodes.
First three were great, and there's I think there's like nine more. Like 12.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's an odd number. So now we were going to end our this podcast, this episode, this live stream of what we watch when we drink on the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network. We were going to talk just about a few things that each of us of things like we're
an
watching.
Hour and a half.
We can save it for something for the next one. Save it for the next one.
Well, why don't we do one show each of us go around that we're either watching or that really impressed us right now?
Okay. I got one.
Quickies. I'm going to do two because I like to grab things. Reacher, watching Reacher. It's a bit of a hit or miss because I don't know that this book was one of the better books, but Reacher is just tremendous. The acting in it, I think, is very good. And then the Night Agent is coming back again, and I can't wait to see the Night Agent as the next season of that. Ange, okay. What are you doing?
And
I have been watching Dope Thief on Apple TV Plus with what's his name, Brian Tyree Henry, who was in Widows and he was in Atlanta. He played Paperboy. And also it has Wagner Mora. He was in a couple episodes of Mr. and Mrs. Smith last year.
Yep.
And I don't know what else he's been in. He's getting a lot of work. But I'm really liking it. And I just watched episode 5 on Sunday, and it was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. Filmed in Philly.
Yeah.
They play Wagner and Brian Tyree Henry. Yeah. Play Ray Driscoll is Brian Tyree Henry and Wagner Mora is Manny Carvalho, and they're like best friends. You know, they grew up together, and they live in Philly, and they came up with they both had their addiction problems, substance abuse, all this kind of stuff, but now they've come up with a scheme. Basically, they're going to be like, I don't know, sort of Robin Hood, except they're not giving anything to the poor; they're keeping it for themselves. But they're robbing basically low level drug dealers, posing as DEA agents. But in one episode, they basically rob the wrong house and all hell breaks loose.
Oops.
So, and Ving Rhames plays Brian Tyree Henry's dad, who's in prison. And wasn't it Kate Mulgrew? I know she's been around for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
But she plays
she's from Star Trek.
Oh, okay. She plays a stepmom.
One of the Star Trek.
And they're really the four people that are really famous in this. But it's really, really good. It's really good. They said it was filmed maybe a couple years ago in Philly. Might have been during the pandemic. Yeah. But it's good. Oh, and
That's also on
Apple TV, yes. And Maren Ireland's in it also. She was on Sneaky Pete.
Oh, I like
She's
her.
She's really good
in
this.
I love her. She's great.
She's really, really She's good in this. She plays plays an actual DEA agent. And she's very good. It's a gritty show. It's kind of funny. Brian Tyree Henry's fantastic. That guy is he's awesome. His facial expressions alone are worth it.
And he's a Marvel guy.
Is he a Marvel guy? What's he in now?
He was in Eternals.
Oh, was he?
Who isn't?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
It's crazy.
But he's really, really good.
It's stunning.
But I'm enjoying the show.
It's stunning how many people are Marvel
guys. It's ratcheted up, and episode 5 was great. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how it goes.
Anything else?
Oh, let me see. I'm really liking that. This is going to be stuff we recommend. And I watched Anora. We talked about doing an episode on Anora because it won the Oscar. Yep.
That's the Oscar winning movie.
It won Best Picture. I don't know if it's a Best Picture movie, but it is really good. It's really, really good. Not one to watch with the kids, you know, because like the first 15 minutes, you know, basically take place at a strip club. I'm not complaining, but I don't think I'd be comfortable watching it with my kids. But it's really good. It's actually really, really good. It's got a lot of good energy. It's got like a, it feels like a 70s movie. You know, it feels like something from the 70s, not 80s. Like, you know, it's just, it's really, really interesting. It's really well done. So I thought it was good.
Good. Mike, I actually watched the new episode, new season of Night Agent, and it's, I really enjoyed it.
You're going to ruin it for me? And here are all the spoilers. Why you?
So in the first episode, there's a lot of bookends. So I got just one that I just, well, one and a half. I just finished on Apple also, Berlin ER. And it's a German-made show in an ER emergency room in a really crappy hotel that doesn't have enough money, you know, not enough people, not enough money. And it's not so much like your regular medical procedure where it's the two or three injuries or medical events of the week. It's more a drama about the five or seven, eight main characters. One woman is brought in to clean up this disaster. Well done, Michael. To clean up this disaster of an ER, and that many have kind of come in to try to do and have failed. She tries to come in to do it herself. She's coming from, let's say, she has some bad background of some sort. She comes in from Munich, I think. And she tries to clean it up. There's the other main character is a doctor who is also an addict, and who's hiding it and trying to, and he's a trauma surgeon. It's really interesting. It gets into some really interesting issues that are not necessarily about Germany, but they're about the world. And it's very, very gritty. There's some similarities to The Pit, and then there's completely non-similarities.
Is it subtitled or dubbed?
It's all in German. You can just, you know, you can watch it in English or you can watch it in German. There is some English that gets spoken in the show, but it's in German. So that I finished I highly recommend it. I just started watching, I heard about this and I watched the first episode. It's an Israeli show. Apparently the Israelis were making all these shows that were coming to America.
Right. The same 10 people making movies.
Same 10 people. Right. And for whatever reason, that's kind of stopped. There's been a drought, and now there's starting to be this second wave of shows coming. And this one that it just hit last month.
They got
10
more
Netflix
people. Is that what it is? There's 10 new
people. It's weirdly, I don't recognize anyone in this show. 10 new people. It's called Seven Figures. Yeah. And it's about, how to explain this? It's about four groups of people who have won the lottery in Israel. And they can't get the money until they sit through like X number of sessions with a counselor and a group therapy so that they don't blow the money in 3 weeks. Right. But it's not about them it's not about them having the money. It's about them, what leads up to them getting to the money. And there's a young couple who are with one of the woman gets pregnant and they don't, and the guy's got ideas of what he wants to do with his money, like he wants to travel. And all of a sudden, now he's going to be a dad. There's an older couple who the woman, like they live on a kibbutz. They're like in their 80s. She wants to give all their money when they get it to their kids. And just don't take any. We don't need any money. Why do we need money?
We're 80.
We
don't need anything.
We're 80. Why do we need the money? And there's a, there's another person, and there's one person that hasn't shown up yet who, for whatever reason, we haven't seen this person yet, that they didn't show up to the first meeting of this group. Apparently it's not based in reality. That's not how lotteries work.
They should. So many of these people,
it's a really interesting, it is a really, when I read that, I thought, wow, this is a really great idea. This doesn't happen. This is a really good idea of how to get people to understand what having all this money is going to mean to them in their lives.
They've done a thing where they said within 4 years or something, the people who win a lottery are actually financially worse off than before they won the lottery.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like some absurd and percentage of people just... The reason you didn't have money before is because you can't handle money. So I give you a whole lot of it.
That's right.
You horribly mishandle it now.
And there's rules. This counselor actually has rules. You can't talk about this.
So like Fight Club?
You can't talk about the... Kind of. You can't talk about the money because you don't have it. You don't, can't talk about the money. And I'm going to be the two rules. But you can't do that. You have to do these things and go through this like X number of weeks of counseling before you can actually get the money. And then there's some even a delay to get the money after that. So, oh, it's another young couple that they are going to get married and they've got, you know, their own issues and they need the money to pay for the wedding and et cetera, et cetera. So they've got other issues. It's a really interesting concept for a story.
Right.
So I'm kind of excited about getting it. So first episode really got me.
Where's this one?
So those are my two. It's on Netflix. I'm sorry. It's called Seven Figures on Netflix. So it's in Hebrew, but you can watch it in English. Okay. Dubbed or
good, because I don't know any Hebrew. I barely know English.
Okay. We're cutting you off at three.
Yes.
We're cutting you off at three.
So there you go. We have had quite the episode. We have talked about a few things that we are watching or going to watch. And we went through the first three episodes of The Studio on Apple Plus TV. This has been What We Watch When We Drink. We highly recommend The Studio so far and encourage all you folks to at least watch the first three episodes and maybe more. This episode of the podcast will be out next week. And we all had some interesting whiskeys. We had Mike had the McKenna
Bottle and Bond,
and had various things from the Mark Gillespie Lollapalooza giveaway.
Whiskey Palooza,
and Mr. Krabs.
2024.
It was a Boozanza. It was a Boozanza.
Thank you, Mr. Gillespie. I've seen that corral of whiskey of his, and it's quite impressive. But a little bit lighter apparently now that you gentlemen have
had. Wow, he had to make room for more stuff.
A little more organized.
A little more organized. There you go. Shout out to Mr. Gillespie out there. And his wonderful website and podcast himself, WhiskeyCast. So there you go, guys. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. You can get this thing on next week on a podcast on all the normal places. Don't forget to watch Mike and Angelo at the murder table reviewing various things. And we'll see you on the other side.
Cheers.
Cheers, all.
Cheers.
Play us off.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.